is it? Yes. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Yes. Now, this class is in Genesis, the last part of Genesis, and we're studying the life of Abraham. It's been 2 weeks since we met, and I can't for the life of me remember where we were, and I've been asking around a little bit. Some of you will know exactly where we are. The other thing that happened is 2 weeks ago, no recording was made, so we don't have that. And I think we're about chapter 18. So everybody will have forgotten the whole thing, and I guess we, in principle, should go start over again.
We're in chapter 18, verse 18.
18:18. Okay. Thank you very much. There we go. Somebody does homework. But may I quickly give a quick review, since there's a tape missing. In chapter 15, we had God making a covenant, Brit, cutting a covenant with Abraham, an agreement that involved the killing of animals, the separating of the parts of the animals into two groups, God walking down in between these cut-up animals in a nighttime ceremony, making an unconditional set of promises to Abraham that amplify the informal promises God had previously made. And verse 6 of chapter 15 is an important verse. And he, Abraham, believed the Lord, and he, God, reckoned it to him as righteousness. That's one of the key verses quoted over in the New Testament, when we find that righteousness comes to us as a gift from God when we place our faith in him and what he's promised. That's the covenant with Abraham holds down through all of history to all time, to all groups of people. It's still in effect. We have the benefits of the same covenant when we put our faith in Jesus and when we take the Bible and act on what God has declared. Now, at this particular point, this pivotal point in the life of Abraham and his relationship with God, God gives him some extra information, if you'll remember, in the latter part of verse chapter 15. After the sun was going down, there comes a great and dread darkness. And the Lord said to Abraham, several things are going to happen in the next 400 years. Your descendants will be sojourners in a land that is not theirs, and they'll be slaves there, and they will be oppressed for 430 years. But I will bring judgment on the nation which they serve, and afterward they will come out with great possessions. What nation is this that's referred to here? That people here, that Abraham thinks that he's going to be safe and comfortable, and he can have a son and die, and life in Israel will go on uninterrupted forever. And no, God says, no, that your descendants will be out of this land for 430 years. What land are they in?
Egypt.
Okay, they're in Egypt. And while that happens, why are they in Egypt? They're in Egypt for two reasons that I can think of.
There was famine in their land to begin with.
That's the first time that Abraham went down, there was famine. Would there be anything in the track record of Abraham that would suggest that maybe his descendants should have the same lesson over again? Yes, Abraham's disobedience may be a kind of a template Abraham's disobedience earlier may have been a template so that God would send the whole nation down to Egypt for 400 years in the time of testing. But what else is, what's the main reason that tells us a little later? Who are these other people that have been living in the land for quite a while that are not very good people?
The Canaanites.
The Canaanites.
In particular, the Amorites.
And there's a list usually of 6 or 10 of these nations that are descendants from Ham, and they're particularly bad as far as their morality is concerned. They're not interested in God. They wanted to live a wild and carefree California type lifestyle, which they proceed to do. It gets worse and worse. They know whose land it is. They know that they shouldn't be living there. They've heard about God for 400 years, and they are not the least bit interested in knowing the Lord. Are there any exceptions to that? Yes? Anybody from the Canaanites ever come to know God? Yeah? I think I picked two. Rahab, the prostitute at Jericho, who gladly came, and maybe possible some of her family. Ruth, the Moabites. Moab is not exactly in this in the Canaanite class. Descendant of Lot. Okay. Well, anyway, anybody from the Canaanites would more than welcome to become a believer, become part of the community of Israel. Nobody was interested. Just about like now in this country. Very difficult to get anybody to have a discussion with you about who God is and how to know him. Very few. And most of the people in this country have heard the gospel, at least in the older generations. Okay, now the next thing that happens in chapter 16 is that that we're still faced with the problem that after all these long years, after Abram left Ur and came over to the promised land, he has not yet had the son that was promised to him. So he's wandering around thinking, I'm going to die any day now. He's 75 when he left home. He's actually going to live to 175, isn't it? Yeah. So he's not even halfway through his life. But he's still worried about how come he doesn't have a son. And he proposes two candidates. First of all, he suggests that maybe his hired servant from Damascus, Eleazar, which means God helps, that maybe Eleazar would be a good heir. And God said, nope, not at all. And the next thing that happens is that Abraham and Sarah have a little conference back and forth between them. And Sarai suggests that her handmaiden Hagar might be a good mother to bring the promised son into the world. So they go about that little plan, and a son is born to Abraham and Hagar. The son's name is Ishmael. And the Muslim nations today claim that the inheritance did in fact pass on to Ishmael and then on to the tribes of Arabia. So this is a point of contention today. The Bible says that the promises God made to Abraham don't pass on to Ishmael. They pass on to the legitimate son of Abraham, who's going to be born here shortly. And that son's name is Isaac. Okay, good. You guys are all going to get straight A's, I think. Final exam is oral. You and Jesus, one at a time. So, okay. Now, there's conflict between Sarai and Hagar and Abraham as this boy grows up. So reluctantly, Abraham throws Ishmael and Hagar out. Reluctantly. Abraham loves his son Ishmael. It's too bad he can't fit into the family and they can't accommodate him, but apparently there's enough pressure that he leaves. And then what happens? So Ishmael and his mother Hagar go out into the desert and die of starvation and in thirst. Is that? No, they don't. They call upon God and God meets them and promises that they will have a posterity, that they'll have blessings from God, that they will be watched over and taken care of. So that's interesting. So the covenant with Abraham's not the only covenant that God makes. He makes covenants all down, covenant with David, covenant with others down through, as we see, that are limited agreements, okay? So that's what chapter 16 has. And chapter 17 tells us that Abraham has been in the land. He's 99 now, and he left home at when he was 70, so he's a total of 70 plus 99. No, 70 plus. He's 30 years?
29.
20 years, okay. 29 years, that's right. Abraham was 99 years old. The Lord appeared to him and said, I am God the Almighty. The first use of the name of God, El Shaddai, is right there. The all-sufficient God who can do anything that's needed. I will make my covenant between me and you and multiply you exceedingly. Abraham fell on his face, and God said to him, behold, my covenant is with you, and you shall be the father of a multitude of nations. It's interesting. Who are those nations that Abraham is going to essentially be father over? Do you have any idea? Well, any nation in history that responds to John? Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to say that ultimately that would be every nation on earth.
Yes, ultimately every nation on earth.
In Revelation, you've got people from every tongue and tribe and nation.
Yes, that's right. And that's some 70 or 75 nations when they went into Egypt. And now it would be any nation that shows a strong response to the preaching of the gospel, of which there are a few nations now, but eventually that's what we'll have. We'll have Jesus in charge of Israel with the disciples, and we'll have all the other nations, large and small, depending on who is responsive. Okay, so this is an important covenant. Now this covenant is signified by the ceremony of circumcision for Abraham. He is to circumcise himself and the male members of his household, young or old, and that is to be an indicator that will identify and mark out the Jewish people as unique. Well, circumcision is pretty universal now. It's not just uniquely Jewish. However, in Israel, if you're a baby born in Israel, on the eighth day of your life, normally a rabbi will circumcise you. Not a significant surgery, but still part of the way the Jews observed this, part of the covenant to Abraham. Not necessary according to the New Testament anymore. Now let's see. The close of chapter 17 says that Ishmael is now 13 years old, and he also is circumcised in the circumcision. He's considered a member of Abraham's household, although as we've seen, he's thrown out. Anyway, chapter 18, Hebron, the oaks of Mamre are oak trees down at Hebron, south of Jerusalem, about 30 miles, I guess. Anybody been there? The tomb of the patriarchs is there, which is half Muslim and half Jewish, and the number of the patriarchs and their wives are buried there. In 1983, Carl Gallivan and I went there with our radar equipment and looked through the base of the tomb to see if we could see the bones of the patriarchs, but we couldn't. And I think they're still there. It's a little tough. The Muslims don't like either Jews or Christians hanging around the tomb. And it's too bad. Yeah, they'll regret that. But anyway, God appears to the Lord, Jehovah, appears to Abraham at the Oaks of Mamre, which is down in Hebron. And Abraham is sitting in his tent. He's a tent dweller, picks up and moves with his herds. And three men show up suddenly. And the customs of hospitality in the Middle East to this day are that you always show hospitality to strangers when they knock on your tent flap, whether they're friends or enemies or you don't even know. That's just your obligation to this day. And right away, Abraham notices that these three men are above average in their demeanor and so on. So he quickly has his wife prepare cakes, and then he escalates the hospitality by having a goat or a lamb brought to him, which he kills and prepares for dinner. So he can take all day, but he nevertheless goes out of his way to show hospitality here. And one of these three men says, where's Sarah? That's chapter 18. Where did we stop?
18, verse 17.
Okay, well, we'll get there in a minute then, our quick summary. One of these three men inquires as to where Sarah is. Now, in Middle Eastern hospitality, the women very often are not present when the men entertain guests, sometimes. But oftentimes the women will be hiding off in the kitchen making dinner and something. And the men will be smoking cigars and talking about their camels. I don't think they have cigars. Anyway, one of these three strangers then inquires about Sarah. And this stranger says that Sarah's going to have a son in another year. And that she laughs, and Abraham laughs. This is ridiculous. That's the sort of their unbelief. And it's, and for a stranger to come and tell you what you have longed to know is a little bit unusual. And what does the word laughs translate into in Hebrew?
Isaac.
It does. It transfers into Isaac. Isaac means he laughs. So that's laughter, or laughter. It's a great name for the patriarch, the head of a great nation. And both Abraham and Isaac are full of unbelief at this point, and they're both sterile at this point, turns out. Although later on, Abraham's going to have a whole bunch more kids by another wife. Anyway, two of the three men depart and head in the direction of Sodom, which is down over the hill, up over the top of the crescent of the hills, and then way down 1,300 feet below sea level to get to where Sodom and Gomorrah are. Two of the men head down that way, and the third man stands behind and wants to have a one-on-one talk with Abraham. Verse 16, the two men set out from there, and they looked toward Sodom, and Abraham went with them to set them on their way. Turns out there's a lookout, a high point you can go to this day. You can walk up to the head of this lookout and point out exactly where to go down in the valley to the sites of Sodom and Gomorrah. These sites have been excavated in the last 30, 40 years, and you find all the right age dating and the right piles of burnt timber. And so it's pretty clear we got the right cities. We'll get more about them in it probably next time. The men set out from there, and they looked toward Sodom, and Abraham went with them to set them on their way. The Lord said, "Shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do, seeing that Abraham shall become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall bless themselves by him? No, for I have chosen him, that he may charge his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice, so that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has promised him." Then the Lord said, "Because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great and their sin is very grave, I will go down to see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry which has come to me. And if not, I will know." Now this third man is a little unusual.
Just a little bit.
A little bit. He seems to have an incredible amount of authority, and he seems to be out to just do whatever he wants to do. Who do you suppose it is?
Jesus.
This is a theophany, an appearance of the Son of God, the second person of the Trinity, in the Old Testament, in human form, looked just like a man. And so this is Jesus, who's the one who's debating with Abraham the fate of Sodom and Gomorrah. That's a reminder of the role that Jesus has in the all of the nations to this very day. That's his, our fate and the fate of all the nations is in the hands of Jesus, which is pretty cool because he's very fair. All right. So the men turned from there and went toward Sodom. By the way, I wonder if Jesus says the sin is very grave and I'm getting a lot of complaints about these cities, so I think I'll come down and investigate them. What's that all about? Who would be complaining to God about these isolated little cities? It doesn't matter what they do, does it? They're not in doing anything wrong, are they? At least in their own eyes. They're not, as far as I know, they're not campaigning for gay rights. I don't know. But God, Jesus, is getting complaints about them. From all kinds of people, from all sorts of decent, righteous people that have just get word of mouth about what a wild and rowdy bunch of people they are. Lack of hospitality, pride, arrogance, extreme sexual immorality, decadence, child sacrifice, just horrendous, okay? The gay community likes to think that God's mad at them because of their lack of hospitality. Well, that's only one of the minor things that's wrong down there. But you could improve your hospitality if there was any question about Palo Alto or anything like that. So Abraham and Jesus here are going to have a discussion. Abraham drew near and said, "Wilt thou indeed destroy the righteous with the wicked? Suppose there are 50 righteous within the city, wilt thou then destroy the place and not spare it for the 50 righteous who are with it? Far be it from thee to do such a thing, to slay the righteous with the wicked, so that the righteous fare as the wicked. Far be that from thee. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? And the Lord said, if I find at Sodom 50 righteous in the city, I will spare the whole place for their sake. Abraham answered, behold, I have taken upon myself to speak to the Lord, I who am but dust and ashes. Suppose five of the 50 righteous are lacking. Wilt thou destroy the whole city for lack of five? He said, I will not destroy it if I find 45 there. Again, he spoke to him and said, suppose 40 are there? He answered, for the sake of 40, I will not do it. He said, oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak. Suppose 30 are found there. He answered, I won't do it if I find 30 there. He said, behold, I've taken upon myself to speak to the Lord. Suppose 20 are found there. He answered, for the sake of 20, I won't destroy it. Then he said, oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I'll speak but once, this once. Suppose 10 are found there. He answered, for the sake of 10, I will not destroy it. And the Lord went his way when he had finished speaking to Abraham, and Abraham returned to his place. Now, why is that in there, and what is there any significance in this? Why is God getting Abraham involved in the government of the world? Because God knows already who's righteous and who's not. If it's time to destroy these cities, God doesn't need to put a notice in the Sodom Examiner or Times announcing this, or he doesn't have to, he just can go and wipe them out. So what's going on here between the Lord Jesus Christ and Abraham, the righteous Abraham? What's going on? This is called intercessory prayer or intercession. When a righteous person stands up for people who are not righteous and asks God's mercy on them. Or it appears that you're bargaining with God. Yes?
Oh, well, yes. I think you're going to say the same thing I'm saying anyway.
You'll say it better.
I think at least part of that was God was using Abraham to demonstrate how, you know, merciful and patient God is.
Absolutely, totally. And this means that you and I can get involved with God. He doesn't mind having us discuss our unsaved relatives, our friends, the state of San Francisco or Oakland or San Jose, if we want to talk about those cities likely to be destroyed and argue with them. That's possible. Lot had gone down there thinking that it'd be better ground for the grazing of his flocks, and I think he thought that he would quickly be a man of influence in the city, and that all sorts of people would come to the Lord. And that didn't turn out, as we'll see a little later on. His influence down there was zilch, zero, which means one lone Christian in a wicked city is probably not going to make a difference. If he'd had four or five people and they'd established a real mission down there, and then that might have been another story. But Lot was compromised all the way in everything he did. So we'll see that when we come to the destruction of the cities.
Leonard, sometimes I've wondered if at least a contributing factor of the conversation that Abraham has with God is that phrase at the end of verse 25 rather, which I like the translation that renders it, will not the judge of all the earth do right? Because that sometimes has been a very helpful phrase in addressing people in one-on-one conversations, someone mm-hmm. who's not a believer yet, mm-hmm. who wants to deflect the challenge to their own life mm-hmm. by saying, well, what about this person? Mm-hmm. What about that person? Mm-hmm. And I have a high school classmate with whom I use that phrase. God will do what's right. Now, she may think that means that God's going to save, you know, the following people kind of thing. And I may think, I don't think my classmate's right. But we can go to Abraham's question, which, of course, is a rhetorical one, that God's answer is yes. He will do what's right. And so that in that conversation, I can get back to the matter at hand. What about you?
Yeah, good. Excellent. That's excellent. And Lot, and Abraham loves his nephew Lot. He cares about him, so he's got a personal involvement. He brought this boy with him all the way from Haran and over in Iraq, and he's tried to influence him every step along the way, what, 13, 14 years now. And so far, yeah, previously we saw that some of the tribes living in the area got in a big fight and had a sort of a civil war among them, and Sodom and Gomorrah and were captured, and all the inhabitants were hauled away by these people from Babylon. And Abraham rescued them, taking 300 choice men, and brought them back, and let Lot return to Sodom, and restored the property to Sodom. It's interesting that Abraham could have helped exterminate the cities right then and there, but he didn't. And he could probably did try to get Lot to not go back there, but Lot's going to go back there. So Abraham just put everything the way it was, and life went on. So Abraham didn't take the matter of the justice of Sodom in his own hands. It's interesting. Let's take the case. Let's take a hypothetical case of World War II, when the Nazis started bombing London every night, night after night. They'd send fleets of aircraft over the city and bomb men, women, and children without any mercy. A little later on in the war, the U.S. and Britain bombed the cities of Germany to absolute ashes and rubble. Now, some of those people, both in England and in Germany, were devout Christians. Absolutely, totally devout. And was it an accident that they got bombed and got killed? Is it an accident that righteous people were killed the same night that unrighteous people were?
Yes.
The next morning you didn't see all the righteous people standing up and saying, oh, thank you, Lord, you didn't even break my windows. No, it looks as if God has moved a hand over the cities and wiped them all out. Is there justice in that? I need some help. Do you suppose there was an Abraham down there praying? Yes, certainly. If those godly people who were caught in the war on one side or another, many of them being Christians, would have known this kind of thing could happen and would already have prayed for it, right? We could be pretty sure about that. What else? We know that God's going to do right by Sodom and Gomorrah whether or not Abraham is involved. We know that.
Well, there's a human justice and a God justice.
Yeah.
Things, right?
Yeah. There's two kinds of justice. I mean, the kind that we invent and the kind that we try to think our courts will uphold. And then there's divine justice, which goes a whole different layer. How about divine justice? Where are we today?
Yeah.
a little iffy. We're never going to be saved by our own merits or by our own track record or own deeds. It's always grace and mercy, which there's plenty of that. Okay? So we can have all we want, all we need. All right, now, chapter 19. Two angels. The other two men with Jesus are angels. They are angels in human form, so they look like ordinary men, and Jesus looks like an ordinary man. In Middle Eastern robes, and the two angels continue on down the hill, and they find Lot sitting in the gate of Sodom. These cities had gates around them, and they closed the gates at night and opened them in the morning. Any significance about that, Lot sitting in the gate of Sodom? When anybody's sitting in the gate of a city in the Old Testament, remember when Solomon's son...
Gatekeeper
would be one important thing. During the daytime, when the gates of the city are opened, all the important officials are there. This is where the records are made and the governor sits and the wealthy trading and banking goes on back and forth. So sitting in the gate of Sodom would mean that Lot's appointed himself to a position of power and influence. Either he thinks he's earned it, or that's where he's living. I am one of the key people here in Sodom. Probably because I'm one of the only believers, therefore I'm really important.
Was he waiting for a meeting?
He, well, I don't think he had any warning. That would be a good question. Do you suppose he was waiting at the gate? because he got a text message that said that two angels were coming to see him. I don't think so. We're not told. If the people in Sodom and Gomorrah had any idea of how much danger they were in, they would have done something long, long before. Okay, two angels come to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom, and when Lot saw them, he rose to meet them. So he did have some expectation that somebody, that they were there to see him instead of the king of the city. So Lot bowed before the angels and with his face to the earth, and he said, "My lords," plural, "turn aside, I pray you, to your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet, that you may rise up early and go on your way." Usual Middle Eastern hospitality for strangers in town, except Lot somehow believes that they're there for him. I don't think any of the people of Sodom probably practice hospitality. So he probably knows that nobody else is going to be receptive to two dignified looking men coming into the town. So, and you know what the angels do? "No, we'd much rather stay in the street than in your house." And Lot is a believer. Do we know anything about Lot from the New Testament? Yeah, we know he was a righteous man and that he was perturbed all day long by the life in Sodom, that it irked him and bothered him all day long. He could have got out of town any time. John?
Do we know if it would have been true there as later in the Old Testament we see that at the gate, that's where the leaders of the city typically hung out?
Yep.
I think that would have applied there. And so here's kind of Lot by himself, but all those other leaders in there also?
Yes, I think the town leaders would have been there. And he's put himself in a distinct class, and he sort of implies that he's an important person around town. Somebody comes into town, I think he sort of assumes that God's going to come and reward him or bail him out or something.
So word would have passed pretty quickly that in the town that, hey, Lot's got visitors.
Yep, that's right. And the visitors don't want to stay in his house. But verse 4. But before, verse 3, but he urged them strongly. Lot urged the two angels strongly to spend the night in his home with his wife and daughters. He urged them strongly, so they turned aside to him and entered his house, and he made them a feast and baked unleavened bread, and they ate. Before they lay down to sleep on the couch or whatever, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both young and old, all... I lost myself.
Surrounded.
What verse did I stop?
Four.
Okay. All the people to the last man surrounded the house. So how immoral was this city?
It's
pretty bad, because all the men of the city of all ages, probably from adolescents on up to old men, had thought nothing at all about going and seducing a visitor to the town, developing an orgy around these two visitors, which is just awful, terrible to think about. They called to Lot, "Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us that we may know them." That word "know" in Hebrew is a term about intimate relationships, intimate sexual relationships. This is maybe a little obscure, but the reality is as awful as you can think of it. Lot went out of the door to the men, shut the door after him, and he said, called the two angels aside, he said, "I beg you, brothers," called the men of the city aside, "I beg you, my brothers, do not act so wickedly." Lot thought the men of the city were brothers. They weren't brothers. They weren't interested in God. They weren't in the same group at all. And Lot has this familiarity with them that's undeserved, unmerited. Behold, I have two daughters who have not known man. I have two virgin daughters here. Take these girls instead. Unthinkable, horrible thing for a believing father to do for his daughters.
No, I don't understand that either.
I don't understand. Let me bring them out to you. But against their will? Lot's pretty confused in his own standards, living in a town where he can find no lifestyles that compare with the one he's been taught. Let me bring them out to you and do to them as you please. Only do nothing to these men. To heck with what happens to the girls, whether they might even be killed. But whatever you do, protect these men. Protect the angels. Huh? They have come under the shelter of my roof. He remembers that part about hospitality, that if strangers come under your roof and you show them hospitality, you have to protect them from outside harm. The angels certainly don't need protecting, but that Lot has this remnant idea that he picked up from Abraham about hospitality. Behold, I have two daughters who have not known men. Let me bring them out to you and do to them as you please. Only do nothing to these men. They have come under the shelter of my roof. But they said, stand back, the men of the city. And they said, this fellow came to sojourn and he would play the judge. This man, Lot, came to be a visitor in our city and now he's trying to play the role of a judge. He thinks he's a big man in town. That's the opinion that the Lot people have about this man, who is probably, Lot's probably living a fairly moral life in comparison with the life of the typical people in town.
I think this gives us an insight into how valued women have become over the ages. Well, at that time, they were not valued as anything, but now women are a valuable part
of our economy. By implication, you can see that God's values the family structure as a family, the integrity of the family, with the mother and a father and the children who are protected and nurtured by both of their parents. And you notice how much the character of families has been eroded away in recent years in this country. And then the status of women is still not liberated as it ought to be, but in the wrong way, okay?
Maybe this is also to underline that these guys were not interested in women. And the father would have known that, but it's for our information, maybe?
That's possible.
Or maybe he knows the girls are really safe. They have been safe in that town. And in a town that immoral, you'd think that by now they would have already been molested. But he has a lot of confidence that they're not going to be.
It may be. So, maybe. It may be that we have to give Lot a little bit of credit here for something. A little bit. Behold, I have two daughters. Now, where did I stop?
Ten.
Oh, I got way down there. The men put forth their hands and brought Lot into the house to them and shut the door. The two angels run out into the street with this big mob out there and they drag Lot back into his own house and close the door. You know, we're not going to have any discussion or any dialogue or any. So probably the crowd get violent if they started anything. And they struck with blindness the men who were at the door of the house, both small and great, young and old. These were kids from boys up to old men. And so they wearied themselves groping for the door. So even blinded, the men of Sodom still clamored to try to break into the house. Just unbelievable. Then the men said to Lot, have you anyone else here? Sons-in-law, daughters, sons, or anyone you have in the city, bring them out of the place, for we are about to destroy this place because the outcry against its people has become very great before the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it. There's the same kind of offer of mercy that God gave to Rahab the harlot at Jericho, yeah. The town prostitute. Rahab, while we're gone, the Israeli spy said, go get your mom and your dad, your brothers and sisters, anybody around town, maybe some of your customers who want to be part of the family of God, bring them here, and when we save you, we'll save these others. Same thing here. Lot, do you have any other children that aren't living at home? And maybe other sons with wives or whatever. He's got two virgin daughters. Does he have any other children? I don't know. I don't think they're mentioned.
He has sons-in-law.
Sons-in-law, yeah. So he's got some daughters living in the city, okay. And evidently they don't want to come. We don't know. We don't see them here. Lot went out and said to his sons-in-law who were to marry his daughters, "Up, get out of this place, for the Lord is about to destroy the city." But he seemed to his sons-in-laws to be jesting. That's the key. When morning dawned, the angels urged Lot, saying, "Arise, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in the punishment of the city." But he lingered. Lingered. It's urgent, quick, get out of town. And there's this human tendency to, oh no, I got to take this, and I got to take my heirlooms, and I have my credit cards, and I got to do this. I can't leave quick. We got an earthquake warning around here, or a big warning of danger. What, we do the same thing probably. Wait, God, you can't do this. We're not. This isn't timing. Isn't right for us. The Lord being merciful to him, that in every detail, the Lord being merciful, not to the people of the city, not to anybody else, that time is gone, and brought Lot out of the city, just set him down. Just the two angels pull him out of town and set him and his wife out of town and the daughters. And the angels say to Lot, "Flee for your life, do not look back or stop anywhere in the valley. Flee to the hills lest you be consumed." Lot said to them, "Oh no, my lords." You can't do that, God. You can't. "Behold, your servant has found favor in your sight, and you've shown me great kindness in saving my life. But I cannot flee to the hills, lest the disaster overtake me and I die." First time he's thought about a disaster. He's been living down there in the town that was ready for disaster for, 13 years. He's been in danger the whole time from God's judgment. "Oh Lord, oh no, my lords, behold, your servant has found favor in your sight. You've shown me great kindness in saving my life, and I cannot flee to the hills lest the city overtake me and I die. Behold, yonder city is near enough to flee to, and it is a little one." The actual name of one of the other cities, there's five cities, is Little. That's the name of the city. Five little. I wonder how big these cities were. Anybody make a guess, because that's about all we could do. Are they a million people? No, there's no room for a million people. Make a low level, a small number.
Couple hundred
at the other end, somewhere in between a couple hundred and a million. Maybe a few thousand, maybe a few thousand something. I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. The archaeologists who've excavated cities like this could probably tell you. And the graveyards are there, and they can count over the history these cities were occupied. And then this is real early in history. This is 4,000 years ago. So there'd be an awful lot of archaeological ruins in this region afterwards as people came and built up in the area. Okay. "Behold, yonder city is near enough." Can't I go to another little safe city just like Sodom, only small? See that huge compromise in that? I don't want my lifestyle disturbed. I don't want to live a godly life. I want to live a prosperous life. He said to him, "Behold, I grant this angel. Behold, I grant you this favor also, that I will not overthrow the city of which you have spoken." Okay, the angel says, I'm a little exasperated. It's been a long day. I don't think the angels get tired. But he kind of exasperated enough. Okay, Lot, if you want to, we'll spare this little town, it's little Sodom, and you can live there. Same sin, same immorality, same everything. Therefore, the name of the city was called Zoar, which means little. The sun had risen on the earth when Lot came to Zoar. So there they are. They're out of the town. Then the Lord rained on Sodom and Gomorrah brimstone. That's sulfur. And fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he overthrew those cities and all the inhabitants of the cities and what grew on the ground, all that fertile, rich land that Lot had been making money off of is gone. Abraham's land is rich and fertile, and he owns the whole country, so no problem. And Lot could easily have gone over the hill and stayed with Uncle Abraham, right? He didn't value that. So he's a believer, but he doesn't like to hang around other believers. Know anybody like that? Nobody, no. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people. Oh, I know the Lord, but I just don't want to go to church. And I just don't like other Christians. So. Okay. Now, if you've been to this area, the Dead Sea is just north. The Dead Sea is salt. It's so salty, 25% salt. I have a bottle at home of salt water. If you want to test it and taste it, it's poisonous. You can float in it. Some of the ladies from this very church went to Israel with me. When was that, 83 or 80, 90. And the ladies all got mud, covered with mud, and I could bring those pictures in and embarrass them, but I won't anyway. But it was in the 20s and 30s, big chunks of tar would periodically come up from the bottom of the Dead Sea and float, and they were actually harvest these chunks of basalt or tar. And you remember when the king of Sodom and fled north, and the town was raided, that the people of the area got stuck in the tar pits, because there were all these La Brea tar pits in the whole area, pools, seeps of lava and oil. It would be covered with sand and leaves and things, and so if you could walk right out in them. Anybody ever been to the La Brea tar pits? Go there if you haven't. It's just fascinating. They've dug down into the tar pits and found thousands of years of skeletons going way back to when Los Angeles had different species living there than they do now. So, with that, there are tar seeps around the world. And the other thing you can find in that immediate region is strata of sulfur. I remember you go to the gift shops in the area, and they'll sell you a little vial of sulfur. And the other thing about that rift, that Dead Sea rift, runs up and down the whole valley up into Turkey, runs south down into Africa. It's one of the biggest, deepest earthquake faults in the whole world. And stratigraphically, it's two plates have folded over each other in the area, and it's geologically just a perfect place to have an earthquake with a great eruption of burning tar, burning sulfur, going up to a great height and raining back down. Now, if you want to have God sitting above it and using his own sulfur and his own fire and his own brimstone, I don't have any problem with that, because the Lord rained down fire and brimstone on those cities and all the pasture lands. So if God's up there sitting and doing it from a UFO or something, that's fine. But you get the point here. There's enough minerals in the area, you can account for this as a natural disaster. But it wasn't. There are no natural disasters, right? No natural disasters in the universe where everything is managed by God. Okay. All right? No, I'm really lost. Oh, let's see. The mud baths in that area are really very healthy. 30. Verse 30, oh my goodness. 27. Abraham went out in the morning. Okay, so Abraham gets a good news. Oh, Lot's wife looked back. 26. Lot's wife behind him looked back. Now, why is she behind him? How come Lot hasn't taken the care of his wife and made sure that she was safely out in front of him? Why didn't he hold her hand or help her get out? Why did Lot run for his own life, first of all, and then let his wife fare for himself? Then not very cool, is it? Nope. Selfish. And his wife, she hesitates too, and she looks back, which the angel says, don't look back. And here's all this stuff raining down, and she happens to get in a big downpour of salt. There's plenty of salt there, and some of the geographical features in the area look like Lot's wife. So there are a couple of salty-looking pillars that I suppose one of them could be Lot's wife. She's not getting out, though, the pillar. There's a couple of caves in the area, too, which are set up as little shrines that you could, or Lot's cave. in the area. So it's becoming a tourist attraction. Lot, she looked back and became a pillar of salt. That literally happened. I think that's what happened to her. Abraham went out. Now he goes. He's up way up on the high of the 2,000 feet above sea level, looking down into this valley, which is 1,500 feet below sea level. Awesome landscape here. Abraham, early in the morning, goes to this lookout where he'd been the day before with the angels. He looked down toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the valley, and behold, lo, the smoke of the land went up like the smoke of a furnace. So it was when God destroyed the cities of the valley, Lot remembered Abraham. God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in which Lot dwelt.
Do you know if they ever found where Zoar is?
Yeah, I think I don't. I didn't bring a map. This is
south.
It's south. Yeah, Sodom would be the northmost. Sodom and Gomorrah are right up against the hills that are that go up into Jordan on the east side of the Dead Sea, and I think Zoar is over on the Israeli side.
It's at the tip.
Oh, she's got it in her map. Okay, some of the later Bibles will have them.
Yeah, it's at the tip of the Red Sea south.
Because the Associates for Biblical Research, I think, excavated there some in the 30s or 40s, and every community is pretty well convinced that those are the right cities. God remembered Abraham. What does Abraham have to do with this? I thought God was making up his own mind. It's interesting that God will cooperate with human beings who he takes into his confidence, and to teach us also how to make decisions that are important, and how to work together with God. If you're going to be a leader and walk by faith, and God takes you into his confidence, it's a very high privilege. And so God has melded Abraham's plans into his destruction of the cities. God, remember, how much time, when do I have to quit? 10 minutes, 5 minutes?
10 minutes.
Okay. Verse 30. When now Lot went out of Zoar, went up out of Zoar. He didn't like living in Zoar. He got scared there. He moves out of Zoar. Lot went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the hills with his two daughters in a cave, probably. Maybe one of the caves that we know about. He was afraid to dwell in Zoar. Well, I think he should be afraid. Just one aftershock, a little burp on this eruption, and Zoar would be gone too. And I would think that God would probably want to destroy Zoar. So anyway, Lot takes his daughters, and they dwell in a cave. Now, the firstborn, the oldest daughter, our father is old, and there is not a man on earth to come into us after the manner of all the earth. There's no man to come into us and have sex with us just like they do down in Sodom, just like is the common all over the earth. They have no idea of what a godly family is. They've never seen one. Where would they go to see godly families? They'd go over to Abraham's tent, and they'd see that hundreds of people dwelling with Abraham having families and raising their kids right. And these two daughters of Lot don't have a clue. All they've seen is the debauchery of Sodom. Our father is old.
Wouldn't that be more understandable from the standpoint that they would be doing that for survival?
Yes, absolutely. Because they realize that they didn't get to marry their boyfriends that died down in that they were engaged to. They didn't get to marry them. And there's no candidates. Here they are in a cave. Where's everybody else? Lot has not apparently told them about Abraham and the family and their family history. They could easily have hiked right up over the hill and come to Abraham's tent, and Abraham would have welcomed them, surely, right? Okay. Our father, come, let us make our father drink wine, and we will lie with him sexually, that we may preserve offspring through our father. So they made their father drink wine that night. Father didn't notice that he was drunk. Didn't seem to bother him any. And the firstborn went in and lay with her father, and he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. Amazing. And on the next day, the firstborn said to the younger, "Behold, I lay last night with my father. Let us make him drink wine tonight also, that you go in and lie with him, that we may preserve offspring through our father." That's their goal. So they made their father drink wine that night also, and the younger arose and lay with him, and he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. So Lot had hangovers for 2 days, and he didn't even know why. He must have been very drunk. And this is just defies any explanation other than the desperation of these girls. They would have been how old? They would have been teenage girls, or maybe a little, not much older. Thus, both the daughters of Lot were with child by their father. Do we know what happened to those sons? Yes. There's two sons, one to each daughter. The firstborn bore a son and called his name Moab. He is the father of the Moabites to this day. The younger also bore a son and called his name Ben-Ammi. He is the father of the Ammonites to this day. So those two tribes now, where do they settle? In the land that is now Jordan?
Jordan.
And, there's a... Yeah, this in Jordan, what's now the land of Jordan, east of Israel. It's part of Canaan land, yeah.
Takes us back to the very beginning of our reading today. Of Abraham was chosen so that he will direct his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord. And it doesn't look like Lot's been doing that, especially negligent and not telling them about the rest of their family.
Exactly. And so what kind of people did the Ammonites and the Moabites grow up to be? And they probably got word that they were related in some way to Abraham. They may never have gotten the story. How did they live? Pretty bad. They were decadent, but they had a certain measure of protection because of Abraham. It's sort of blood related to Israel. The capital of Jordan is Ammon, that's the name, same word, Ammon. The Moabites are in the north, and the Ammonites and the Moabites are pretty much fill up the land that is now Jordan. If you take a tour in Jordan, they will show you the territories of Moab and Ammon, and also Edom, which is in the south. And these historic lands are still there then. Wonder what happened to Lot. So Lot reformed his life, went to a Billy Graham crusade, and he realized that he'd messed up big time, and he became a missionary to Africa, and we don't know anything more about him. Is that what happened? No. Went to heaven. You can meet him. By the way, if you want to go meet Lot in heaven, I think it'd be a little embarrassing what you would talk about. Don't you think so?
Yes.
Especially since he was asleep and drunk, and his daughters and the kid, he wakes up and finds the girl's pregnant. And then what's he going to do? Is he going to go over to Father Abraham and say, "Look, there's been a few problems in our household. It isn't just that these beautiful girls have been sleeping around with the tribe next door." There aren't any tribes next door at that point. It's a pretty horrible chapter here of the decadence and ruin. It's interesting to me that the decadence of these cities, we read in the book of Ezekiel that Israel spiritually went downhill like a prostitute and became more decadent and more ungodly and more unbelieving. And eventually God says to Jerusalem, "Your sins are worse than Sodom and Gomorrah." Not the same kind of sins, but worse in my eyes. You're more accountable and your behavior has been more despicable. So God isn't going to judge people just on the basis of their immoral lifestyle. It's respectable people can live lives that get them on the wrong side of God, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, plenty of mercy available to anybody down there in those five cities. Okay, who would like to pray for us to put continuity in this? So, sure, good.
worship you without fear, mothers. Thank you for this great message that we've had today, that we can take it to heart, maybe apply something that we've learned in our lives. Thank you for this day. Amen.
Amen. Thank you. Okay, well, we're caught up now.